Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me as always is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. We're here again once, back on our normal time on a Wednesday, which is nice, I think.
Yeah, I kind of thought maybe we should just keep going with Thursdays, but obviously Thursdays, it butts up against ITN, so we can't actually record on A-Move on Thursdays, but... Yeah, I gotta say, I liked having the show on Thursday just because having that extra day with Shadow of War, I think, was really important for last week.
Yeah, it definitely gave me some more time with that game, which, it's hard to move around my days, but it's the evenings that really shine for free time. So having a whole extra day, meaning I get a whole extra evening to play a game, is usually very beneficial. And, you know, whoever thought it was a good idea to do a show on a Wednesdays, a day after new releases? Like, honestly.
I don't know.
Whose idea was that? It's not like we actually haven't been doing Wednesdays this entire run, but I think Wednesday was our original slot, so... We were stupid.
I think so. And then I think
stupid.
We moved it to Friday, which was good for playing games, but bad for like if we ever had any plans at all. And then I think we moved it to Mondays, and then that was just who likes Mondays, and now we're back to Wednesdays again.
I don't remember Mondays.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe it's not so bad. Like the biggest issue I think doing a show on a Wednesday, and this is a little like sausage making type thing, but is you feel the need to just play what could be ultimately your favorite game of the year. Like sporadically and really quickly, and it's kind of stressful in a way to rush through a game, enough of it to play, and yeah, having that extra day I think doesn't give you enough time to like quote unquote beat the game, but it gives you enough time to feel comfortable talking about it,
form a solid opinion without being rushed for sure.
But you know, I also like having 2 weeks to talk about a game because it gives you time to talk about like the upper level stuff that people are looking for in whether they want to buy something or not. And then the second week is, okay, now that you've purchased it and you're sticking around, let's like dive in and get into the meat of the game, which is what we're going to do today with Shadow of War.
Very much so. And unfortunately, I didn't get too much more time into Shadow of War, but I did make it to Act 2 at least. So good. I've kind of unlocked the next level of the Nemesis system, which is really nice. So I'll be able to talk about that. But first, I wanted to talk just a little bit about South Park. It came out yesterday, The Fractured Butthole. And I've got to say, it is so hard not to type it like butthole, like to actually type it out properly the way the title is worded. So yeah, GG South Park on your game naming. That was amazing. But it's at least so far a whole lot of the same. There are some slight changes to the combat, but overall, like, the story is still, it's South Park's animation style, it's South Park's sense of humor. Like, if you like the first game, The Stick of Truth, then you're going to like the second game. If you didn't, then you won't. Like, it's very much a sequel to that. I haven't played as much as I wanted to, and the problems that I was having were basically it's almost unplayable using the keyboard. There's a couple of mechanics, and again, I hate when they just like lean right into toilet humor. I find their like social commentary humor quite funny, but whenever they just go like super far into like toilet humor, the pooping and the puking and all that kind of stuff, I find it just ugh. And they've really doubled down on that. Like, you had fart powers in the first one, but now it's like every house you go into, you can go and take a shit, and that's like a little mini game.
Wasn't there a pooping like, mini game in the first one? Like, was that was there, like the first thing you did.
I don't remember there being a pooping mini game in the first one, but I could be wrong.
Maybe it was super sidebar type stuff. Yeah. That you never
or really maybe like I was introduced to it right at the beginning and then didn't realize you could do it all throughout the game. But yeah, you can do it in this game for sure, and it's just gross. And but you get good items from it, and you get XP and everything else. Like, it's very much a part of the game,
right?
And so I was having controller problems, and Shadow of War has totally wrecked me for like on game prompts. By the way, I can't play South Park now once I finally got it working with the PlayStation controller, because it gives PlayStation prompts. So I'm like seeing the X and then thinking I have to hit square because I've been translating from Xbox X's while playing Shadow of War, because Shadow of War shows me the prompts for an Xbox controller. So my brain is just totally warped, and I keep clicking the wrong button in South Park now. But for a while, it wouldn't recognize my controller at all. So I went looking for an Xbox controller, couldn't find it in all of our boxes of moving crap. And then, so I was like, okay, you know what? I have to play this game. I want to play this game. I'm excited about it. Like, I'll just try it with keyboard and mouse. Holy hell, dude. It's so bad. Like, they're like, so the pooping minigame is the best example, although the whole entire control system is super, super awkward. But on when you're playing on a controller, you have to do certain things to the sticks. So, like, you have to swirl, like, one clockwise, one counterclockwise, or you have to move them both at the same time, or, you know, stuff like that. And the way that they replicate that on the keyboard, oh my god, you have to do, like, the same or possibly opposite movements on your WASD keys. Sometimes you have to hit more than one of those keys, so you have to hit, like, S and D at the same time, and then, like, down and left on the other side at the same time, and then, like, alternate how you're clicking them, and then you have to all of a sudden switch to, you know, like, you have to be still doing stuff on WASD, but then you have to move your hand all the way over and then do, like, F and Y and stuff like that. And it just, oh my god, it's awful, awful, awful. It's so hard to play. And it's just the way that they've tried to take the analog stick. Because then the other thing they try to replicate is, like, the circular movement of the analog stick. So you have to hit, like, SDWA, SDWA over and over and over. And you have to be doing the opposite thing on the arrow keys. Like, the opposite direction. Like, it just, it's like the whole, like, patting your head, rubbing your tummy thing.
Oh, yeah. it's interesting. You usually, when a game has stronger controller, you know, gameplay, it will often say, like, using a controller is highly recommended. That usually doesn't mean that, you know, a game on PC just does not work with keyboard and mouse. It usually does. I find it very odd that they would... that, you know, it's very rare that a game will just completely say, nope, you have to use a controller. But with this, I'm just looking at the Steam page. There's no mention of requiring or strongly recommending a controller. And I've definitely seen that message pop up as a banner. So that would be your recommendation for this game.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You have to use a controller with this game. Like, it's just, like, keyboard and mouse is awful.
Yeah. So I've noticed it's interesting, like, the translation between keyboard and mouse and controller. Often people will say, like, no, the best way to play something is with a keyboard and mouse. And, like, I get that. And I think it's a case-by-case basis. And I've even seen Steam or Valve specifically with their Steam controller, you know, playing Shadow of War. And with the Steam controller, the right stick is emulated by the haptic feedback touch-sensitive faux control stick. And using that to control the camera and aim the bow is just not the same as, you know, moving with a control stick or, you know, using a mouse. So you're never going to get that perfect, you know, conversion.
Translation,
Yeah, unless you specifically make that pooping minigame, you know, have it have a specific pooping minigame control set with keyboard and mouse. That's the only way to solve it, really, this poop problem.
And that, in a nutshell, is South Park, really. Like, yeah. I'm having trouble pooping, Ryan. That is the biggest problem I have in South Park right now.
Usually people don't involve controllers. They go to the Shoppers Drug Mart and pick up a couple psyllium pills, and they're good to go the next morning. I think that's probably your best solution. I know the game's been getting some, you know, pretty positive reviews, but also some folks, you know, talking about some other aspects of it. I'm looking forward to seeing, hearing more about it as you get further in, because honestly, the first game, I think I came to it later than expected, like after everybody had played it, and I just didn't continue with it. But I do remember looking at the game and it's like, holy crap, not only is this South Park, but this looks exactly like an episode of South Park. If this was playing in the background and people didn't know it was a video game, you would think it's an episode of South Park. That to me is the highest achievement that Ubisoft could have had with their South Park games, because it hasn't been done before with South Park. So I'm interested. It's the same gameplay, like same turn-based type stuff.
Yeah, it's still turn-based combat. There is a little bit of a change because you can actually, like, reposition yourself and your abilities, like, will show you if they'll hit, like, three squares away from you, or like the squares surrounding you, or, you know, like stuff like that. So it shows you like an area of effect underneath each spell, so you can position your character on a grid, and the enemies will move around and stuff too. So there's a little bit of an extra added layer to the combat, which makes it a little bit more interesting, but it's still turn-based. It's still all turn-based. So like I said, it's very, very similar with a little bit more complicated combat. There are some, I think, missed opportunities. Like, we covered a while ago now the difficulty setting, how, you know, you can basically be a white person and it's super, that's like the easy difficulty, or you can be a black person and it's the, you know, hard difficulty, which, you know, is the kind of social commentary that South Park is kind of known for. But it doesn't actually impact your gameplay at all. Like, there are some, you know, like, townspeople, when they walk by you, will say different things if you are a white character versus a black character, but it doesn't actually make the combat harder or, you know, impact your game in any way, like not give you your starting currency or, you know, anything like that. So it's kind of, there's a couple of like very, very superficial missed opportunities, I think. But I, other than that, like it's a good game. It's a South Park game. It's kind of like what I was expecting. And it's one of those almost like guilty pleasure things for me, is like, you know, I find South Park funny, and sometimes it's nice to just kind of turn your brain off and just go into the South Park world, right? Like, just, you know, it'd be stupid and inappropriate and young.
Exactly. No, I totally understand that. And I think where I'm getting that, again, way late in the game, but it's like the Rick and Morty TV show is something like that, where it's funny, it's for mature audiences, and but it still brings you down to the level of, haha, kids, but, you know, it's a little more scientific, I guess, than South Park. But the interesting thing about South Park with this second video game is that in the first video game, they referenced a lot of stuff from the television show. You know, no surprise there. But they dug deep there and referenced some of the more popular moments of the show. So I wonder, in the second game, do they dive, and obviously this is something that you won't be able to report on until you get a little further, but I'm interested to see like what kind of gold mines they dig into in the second one,
you know, in terms of references. So far, at least, I've found a couple of different references to things that happened in the TV show in like items that I found, and then there were a couple of references that I can't remember if it came from the first game or if it came from the TV show, but I'm 99% sure it was from the TV show. So they are very like, time has passed since the last game. The episodes of South Park that have happened since the last game have happened in the world too. So it very much fits in.
Oh, neat.
The only thing is, I feel like they haven't really referenced the most recent season of South Park. And I'm not really all that surprised, because they went from a very like monster of the week, like one-off South Park episodes type of a format, to an overarching like arc over the course of the season. And the way that South Park works is they are very much like, they write on, you know, kind of Monday for the show that comes out on Friday. Like, they are very, very up to the minute in terms of production, and that's why they use the art style that they use and everything else. So they have a very quick turnaround on all of their episodes, and that was really detrimental to South Park in this last season, because Trump won the election, and they written South Park as like Mr. Garrison was the Trump in South Park, and then so then basically they had to make Mr. Garrison win the election, and they didn't have a plan for that. Like, they really didn't think that it was gonna happen.
Not
and
many
it totally
did.
It totally screwed over the plot of South Park the TV show, because like they really didn't know what to do with it from there.
Wow.
So they really screwed themselves. So I'm not surprised that they either, well, I mean, obviously the video game has been in development for a much, much longer time. So I'm not too surprised that, you know, the last season of South Park didn't get included. But at the same time, I'm equally sure it has to do with the fact that the last season was terrible, because it really didn't work out, because they weren't able to predict current events, basically.
It could have been development time as well, but I'm curious, how do you know that obviously, as someone who keeps up with the show, I'm curious how they addressed the fact that you know the show took place and the timeline has continued. Like, how do you know that fact? Like, did they actually reference? They said like last time on, and they showed like the last episode from the season previous.
But like I say, like I have found like objects and stuff from things that I know happened in South Park episodes from like not, I guess, I can't even remember what season the TV show's in, but like not the most recent season, but the one before that. Mm. Things that happened there are included in the second game. I found references to them. And one item that I found that was a reference to the actual TV show has since like started a quest. So it's not even just like little Easter egg stuff. Like, it's actually gameplay oriented. So they're acknowledging that the TV show is a thing and the time has passed. But I just don't think that they've included the most recent. Like, there are no, at least so far, I haven't found like the member berries, which I think was the smartest thing that South Park did in the most recent season. So and I feel like they would, you know, kind of play on that potentially. Although they did have one character who was like, who kind of said like, do you remember? Do you remember, Stan? And I was like, oh, maybe that's their nod towards member berries, but we're just forgetting that that was ever a thing.
Oh, man. I am, so, like, totally out of the
loop. It's very self-referential,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah. No, that's good. I'm glad that it's so far, after controller issues, it's kind of living up to your expectations. And it's funny, and it's humorous, and it's also suffering.
It is what I thought it would be.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what, so. You know, you get into a South Park game, and you really shouldn't be expecting you know, a world-shattering experience. I mean, you should be expecting the sequel to a game that lived up and exceeded expectations of, oh, a South Park game, this can't be good. And then it turned out to be a really good game. I personally remember playing like the N64 South Park game back in the Renaissance days of South Park video games, where you could pee on snowballs and throw them on people. So I think it was a multiplayer first person shooter. Yeah,
now I can catch my farts in my hand and throw them in people's faces to stun them before I start combat. So there you go.
Yeah, it's called I don't know, Scooby Snacks, I think is what it's called. That's what happens when you you know people who are young. That's what they do. It's gross.
I also spent some more time in Shadow of War. Mm-hmm. I am loving this game so much. Like, I love the Nemesis system so much, and I also really enjoy the combat to the point that I am forgiving a lot of things that I wouldn't normally forgive in a video game. Like, story is almost non-existent, and when you do get little story pieces, you're just like, wait, what?
The story is exactly the same as the first one, in the sense that you are trying to stop Sauron.
Right.
Yeah. Which is essentially the plot to Lord of the Rings. And
you
pretty
also
much
know
the same
that you're
going to
fail, right? Because this happens all before the plot of the Lord of the Rings. So
yeah.
You know that no matter what you do, you're going to fail to stop. Which it was kind of exactly what happened with the first city you come across. It's like, I know what city this turns into. So therefore, I know I'm going to fail to defend it.
What's it turn
like,
into?
There are no cities that are... it turns into Minas Morgul, which is like the big tower with the green stuff shooting out of it. But you know that there are no Gondorian cities left in Mordor by the time you get to Lord of the Rings. Oh, so you know that you're going to fail.
My memory is all jacked up. If anything, rather than playing the original Shadow of Mordor DLC, I should have just watched the movies and been like more knowledgeable. Like, the amount of tweets and comments we got from my pronunciation of the people in this world. I'm not even gonna say their names, and no one really like gave me a hard time. They just thought it was funny. But honestly, like, they pronounce Shelob's name once in the game, and then they just call it, you know, pronouns and Spider Queen. Like, it's
the Spider
not,
Queen.
Yeah, it's not helpful. You know, lady with the black hair, even though she is a giant spider in Lord of the Rings. The story just makes no sense. And when you pointed out that like people's biggest issue with it was they created a new ring, and that new ring is not referenced whatsoever in any other literature, I'm sure, or else why would people be upset? But that brings me to the point of, like, yes, your explanation that this is a what-if story, it makes much more sense and should probably calm people down, because this is a really good game. set mm-hmm. in a really fantastic universe, using a lot of inspiration and characters and references from your favorite material to make this game. And I don't think it like poops on, you know, your favorite franchise. It actually, no. I think, supports it very well. It
adds to it, I think. Yeah, exactly. It is very supportive of Lord of the Rings in general.
Exactly.
I think it is. It's very true to the feel of Tolkien. Mm-hmm. So
I just, you know, a lot of people will probably look at this and say, like, well, this isn't my Lord of the Rings, so I'm just going to stay away from this because it does, you know, Shelob is not in this until, you know, Shelob's not with Sauron, or is that a thing? I don't know. Like, it's just, the thing is, I've seen some of those comments, and if it weren't for the loot box issue, it would probably be, again, the top point of why this game has done them wrong. I remember with Shadow of Mordor,
right.
that was a point people had, was that, mm-hmm. you know, the story does well to kind of fit itself in there, but doesn't quite, but then once it fits itself in there, it just, like, tears a new hole. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, we've had, I don't know about you, but we've had enough. I feel like we've had enough Lord of the Rings games.
Oh, yeah, like, of course.
I don't want to play through the story of Frodo and the Ring again. I don't. Like, I love the universe, but I would rather explore, which I think this one does, mm-hmm. a lot of the content in, like, the Silmarillion and, you know, Unfinished Tales and all of the kind of, like, extra material that there is about his universe, because it is. It's a very, very cool, very well fleshed out universe. So I like the idea of taking what Tolkien created and making something new within that universe, like to give me more time to play in this world that I really, really love. It's the same way that I would love more Harry Potter stuff and, you know, outside of, you know, just Harry's story again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why not play with that universe? It's super freaking cool.
Yeah. I agree. And the interesting part is, I think that Warner Brothers has proved itself a very good publisher to create these adaptations of our favorite mm-hmm. franchises. And, you know, Lord of the Rings was with EA for the time in which you're describing, during the Lord of the Rings days when they were making games based on those movies. And I think Harry Potter was with Ubisoft. And, you know, they didn't quite do it justice that I think you could do now, just based on the tech and the type of systems we have available. So it would be really interesting to see Warner Brothers tackle another property like they have with Batman and Middle Earth, and Harry Potter would actually be an excellent one. And, you know, Fantastic Beasts and, you know, Where to Kick Them, that's fine. You don't need to do that, though. That just seems, just don't do that one. I don't know if you mm-hmm. like that movie or not, but
It was kind of okay. But
probably
wouldn't
make a good video game, though.
Yeah, getting a little bit off track, though. But yeah. In terms of, so I mentioned I made it to Act 2. Mm-hmm. So I have unlocked the kind of next layer of the Nemesis system. Okay. And it's really cool. It's really interesting. I like, because now I'm able to turn orcs to be on my side now. So I'm not just, you know, hunting them down. But then it opens it up for, you know, not necessarily as many ambushes, but now you've got potential betrayals and, you know, like all that kind of extra level of things. So it's really, really neat. I'm really enjoying it. So mm-hmm. I put many more hours into Shadow of War than I did into South Park, which is kind of weird because I wasn't expecting to. Shadow of Mordor never really grabbed me the way that Shadow of War has. So I was kind of expecting to play a few hours, you know, give some thoughts on the show and then kind of drop it. But I want to play Shadow of War much, much more than I want to play South Park right now, to the point that I'm even on the fence now. I haven't actually purchased the next Assassin's Creed. It comes out the same day as Mario Odyssey, which I have pre-purchased. Both of them come out next Friday. So I'm a little bit on the fence of whether I'm even going to get the next Assassin's Creed, because I thought I'd be done with Shadow of War by now, and I'm not even close. So
yeah, I still have my pre-order for Assassin's Creed. I have Destiny 2 and Mario and, you know, Fire Emblem coming out.
Yeah, at least I don't have Destiny and I don't have Fire Emblem. So.
Yeah, I was already on the hover button, and I think, you know, that's one of those games that I won't have time to play, even if nothing else was coming out, enough time to really sink into it. But, you know, with Shadow of War, I love the first one, but I also didn't anticipate enjoying the Nemesis system as much as I am, because the Nemesis system in the first one just sort of happened organically around you. In Shadow of War, it encourages you to actively engage in the Nemesis system, whereas
basically it is the game.
Like exactly, yeah, you're absolutely correct, because you know I'm playing the game, and when I'm doing story missions, it just feels like I'm checking boxes. And there are some interesting interactions with characters. The introduction to Bruce is amazing.
Oh god, yeah, he's my favorite character by far so far. Yeah. But there are some interesting kind of lore bits if you are really into Tolkien. Like some of the stuff that they do with Shelob is really interesting, and how like she and Sauron used to be bros and then now they're not, and they're both vying for power and all that kind of stuff. It's like it's really, really interesting from a lore perspective. But yeah, they don't really give you too much there. And when they do, like I say, it's almost kind of jarring, because you spend so much time trying to like fight back these forces and take over these fortresses and stuff. And then so by the time you get back to Shelob, by the time you kind of trigger the event that says like, okay, go get another vision, progress your story, it's kind of like, well, wait, where was I? Like, I felt that a lot of times, that the information I was getting from the quest, there was like a jump between the end of the quest and the, you know, Shelob stuff. Like there, the story just doesn't have the same flow and continuity. It's very, very jumpy.
Yeah. And then after the Shelob stuff wraps up, because there's not much to it, I think you do a little bit more of that and it's like, peace, I'm out. You know, actually once she gives you the ring, she kind of like skittles away.
Right, so I'm past that now. So
yeah, so she kind of disappears, and I mean she's still present in the game and you feel her presence, but she's not as active. And really,
because you can still, her memories are some of the collectibles, and I find that her memories are actually the interesting part about her and her character, much more than like the visions and things. Because I also found, because it is very, very, like, high fantasy, a lot of things, like a lot of the elves, a lot of the helms, a lot of the good guys and bad guys, they all share very, very similar aesthetics, which is kind of a high fantasy thing to do. They create these races and these characters that have very, very small differences between the two of them, and you know, that's what makes it very, very intense and very interesting. I like high fantasy quite a lot. But when you're being shown very, very quick, like whoosh, whoosh, whoosh images in these kind of like prophecies that she shows you, I found it really, really hard to keep up with who these characters were supposed to be. So, or like even locations, because you don't see a whole lot of locations. They had to do the whole blurry edge thing. And like the only character I could really like hold on to in those visions was the main character. And so I'm like, okay, somebody bad is doing something bad to me in a place. Yeah. And then I was just like, okay, that didn't really add much to my story, but that's the main story device in at least through Act One. So I found that, you know, they didn't do a great job with the actual storytelling, but the quests themselves, when you get those little like cutscenes and stuff, and like the way the story is progressing, and I don't want to give too many spoilers, but the characters you interact with when you're questing and when you get those little cutscenes, I think were much better done. I don't know why they kept you going back to Shelob so many times, because her memories are so much cooler than her prophecies.
Yeah, for sure. Her memories, and the memories are snippets. So I think what happens there is like Assassin's Creed, when you collect, while far less punishing, in Assassin's Creed, you would collect like hundreds of collectibles and they would all come together to form this movie, this CG cutscene that you would watch.
Right.
So I think that's what's happening here, is once you collect the 16 memories, which I am maybe three away from, they'll give you a cutscene where Shelob's basically like, yo,
it'll tell her whole story.
We were bros. And Sauron continuously confuses me, because he was always an elf. And I guess deep down I should have known that. But seeing him as an elf always confuses me, because in the movies he's just portrayed as this like giant armored dude, and it's like he could
which
be anything.
Which I actually really loved, and I don't know, because I haven't read absolutely every book. A lot of Tolkien is a little bit of a slog to get through, so I haven't read every book, and the books that I have read, it was a long, long time ago. But I really liked the relationship that they're portraying, and I liked seeing Sauron as he was before he was this like crazy super evil dude. And I also liked the idea of both he and Shelob kind of pursuing power and then one choosing to go the natural route and her, you know, ultimate form becoming a spider and him choosing like the tech route, which plays a lot, you know, the whole nature versus tech actually is quite a strong theme in Middle Earth in general, in Lord of the Rings and in the stories that Tolkien tells. So I liked the, I thought that that was actually quite true to, whether it's actually from his works or not, it was quite true to the soul of what I think is Tolkien. So
interesting.
The idea of her going nature and going spider and him going tech and being this big armored, like mechanical dude, essentially, is kind of how Shelob describes him. I thought that was a really cool twist.
Yeah.
And I want to see more of that. I think that's where the interesting story is. It's definitely not in the main kind of campaign of Shadow of War.
Yeah, and the great part about Shadow of War's open worldness is that you don't feel drowned in the icons that are appearing because everything, all the collectibles, everything you collect in this game are displayed on the map. And you find them by climbing the tower and using the Hydir thing. I know that's not how it's pronounced. And then you...
It's fine. I love you. I'm not even going to correct you anymore. I'm just going
to
Well,
it'd be nice to be corrected because I know it's not pronounced hi, dear. It's like, hey, dear. Hi.
Hey, dear.
Hey, dear. It's just a... You know when you flash deer with your headlights? It's like that, except you're shining it off the collectibles on the ground just to see where the glint is. And then he's like, oh, there it is. Yep. You mark it on your map. Anyways, that's how you mark everything. And I love that, by the way. Personally, I know there are some folks that hate to be sort of guided to a specific point on a map, but myself, I just want to know where the damn thing is so I can get it. That's all I want.
Well, and I mean, like, some of the things that you have to find, specifically I'm thinking about the words that you use to complete the poems and open those moon doors, if they weren't marked on a map, like, do you really want to be in Wraith form and just walking around all these encampments looking at the walls the whole time trying to find a hidden elf word? I know I don't. I would much rather just be told where it is, have to navigate to it, have my fights, beat my war chiefs or whatever on my way, and then, you know, in the end, I get rewarded with an elf word. If I had to try to do all that and then there was no elf word because I picked the wrong wall or something, oh my god, that would be so frustrating.
Exactly. And
it's there's only one more word in this section. Like, what wall have I not stared at yet?
Yeah, and I know some folks don't like to be... I don't even think it's hand-holding. I think it's just like, hey, look over there. It's... Honestly, it's just better this way, I think it's just.
And
more
I think
fun.
It seems to have less collectibles. Like when I go up into a tower, you're usually trying to find like five or six things to put on your map. I think the reason why it feels like there are so many icons on the map is because there's so many other events.
Oh, yeah.
They put skulls on all of the war chiefs or warlords or whatever the hell they are. All the captains, I guess, get skulls on the map, and then you have all of the events that. That progress, whether it's like Gondorian captains are fighting against these orc captains, or if, you know, the orcs are going on a hunt, or, you know, whatever the time-based event is, those are all shown on your map as well. So I feel like that's why the map starts to get a little bit cluttered, or why people are thinking it's getting cluttered. In terms of actual collectibles, there's really not that much.
No, and all of the collectibles, personally, I feel give a reward. Enough for finding them. I like finding the artifacts and listening to Edril, pronounce or say things, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, now I know how to pronounce what this book is, and then I forget immediately. The words are good. I think they open the moon doors, like you said, and you get gear. The gear is to your level, I think, but it is legendary gear, so that's good. But I usually replace it almost. I'm replacing my gear pretty constantly, almost.
They also like flipped the colors, and I know it's because usually I play in a Blizzard universe, but they flip the colors, so I keep thinking I'm getting crappy gear because you're getting this like purpley blue color is their legendary color, as opposed to orange, which is like their epic color. So they flip them, and I'm like, keep it the same. Like, yeah, I keep putting like my yellow gear on instead of my purple gear because I think that yellow is better than purple, like, and I know that they're different companies, but come on, just can we pick a standard? Because it feels like they flipped it just to be different.
I can see that.
Like, they're still using the same colors, they've just flipped them.
I think there should be a standard for gear quality, and really it shouldn't even be Blizzard that sets the standard. It should just be like, we should all come together and realize that, like, okay, Blizzard has four of the most popular games using this standard. we might as well just use it because nobody else has as many examples using the same standard. And I can't even think, like, I know Destiny, I wonder if Destiny will follow the same color scheme.
Cause I would think so, because they're technically part of, like, Destiny's in the Blizzard launcher now, right? Like, it's all the same umbrella parent company.
Yeah. I'm wondering if they'd use the Blizzard scheme. I'm trying to remember.
I hope so. God, that'd be so frustrating.
The color they use.
Although I don't play it, so it's not really that frustrating for me.
Well, I'll report back next week. But I'm really enjoying the gear system in Shadow of War. But you're right, like the Nemesis system, once you get through the first section of quests, the quests do quickly shift to, all right, you're still trying to defeat Sauron, but the way we're going to defeat Sauron is by just taking over everything. Because it becomes, the second act basically becomes, you need to create an army. And this Bruce character comes in. It's probably one of the best character introductions I've seen in a long time, possibly this year. And he comes in, and the first instance when you sort of capture him, just his reaction is just, it's awesome.
Oh yeah, like when you turn him over to your side, and then he goes from this like crazy super angry orc ripping somebody's head off to being like your best bro ever, and he's like, oh hey, how's it going?
And I don't know how
I want to do this now.
Exactly. Like, that's funny. He's the tutorial, basically. And I literally laughed out loud, which, you know, it doesn't happen that often in video games because I don't play a lot of funny games. Mm. And I don't know how much further you got into Act 2, but as you continue to do things within the expanded Nemesis system, he will, like, basically, like, record scratch and pop in and be like, okay, this is really good. So what you want to do next is... And... It continues.
Yeah, at first, I thought he was going to, because I knew I haven't actually had a captain of mine betray me yet. Oh. So when he popped in the first time, I was like, no, you're turning on me already? Don't do it. I thought we were buds. But then he's just there to tell me that I should, you know, like make one of the captains my bodyguard or something after I turned my first captain. So I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I've continued to play and a little bit further in Bruce's storyline. So I don't want to spoil anything, so I look forward to you getting to that point so we can discuss that at a later date. But he is an awesome character introduction.
It's true, and this is kind of another criticism of the game that I have seen, is the amount of time that it takes you to kind of open up and unlock all of the systems. Because, like I said, I just made it into Act 2. I've unlocked Bruce, and I've unlocked the ability to turn captains over to my side and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of the next level of the Nemesis system. And I think I've played for at least 15 hours. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I'm still unlocking systems within the game 15 hours in, some people have said that the ramping up to it slowly is one of their biggest criticisms of the game. Yeah. But I actually kind of like it. Although I would have liked... to have more of the Nemesis system available maybe a little bit sooner, I don't mind that it took this long, just because it's really complicated. Everything in the game seems really complicated. There are a lot of different systems. There's a lot going on. If they'd thrown the entire Nemesis system at me right away, as someone who didn't play Shadow of Mordor, I think it would have been too overwhelming, and I probably would have dropped it. So I think maybe it's a little bit on the long side, but I'm glad they didn't drop it all on me from the beginning.
Shadow of Mordor is basically the first section of Shadow of War in terms of the Nemesis system. I think maybe there were war chiefs in Shadow of Mordor. There was definitely two tiers. But what they add in Shadow of War, which is this fortress system, of which I think you do progress a little further into Act 2, and then you end up, your goal is to take the fortress.
Right.
And Bruce sort of says, like, hey, it'd be really great if, you know, there's a fortress, you can take it, it's yours. And that's the awesome, awesome quest, by the way. But and that introduces you to the next mechanic, which is fortress sieging. And you can kind of micromanage your forge siege from afar and kind of keep tabs on the forge. So the forge has a set power level based on the overlord and then the war chiefs, and each of those war chiefs adds like a defensible thing to
ability.
It. So like you know, if this war chief is still active when you siege, he will throw hot tar over the walls. I don't really know. I've never experienced any of that because I usually have fun just disabling all the war chiefs. So I haven't experienced any of that. But as you disable those war chiefs, you bring down his power level. And then you can bring followers into the siege, and then your power level gets higher. And you can even pump all that silver coin that you've been collecting from destroying gear into siege upgrades that you can then bring into the siege, increasing your power
even further. Which is totally what I've been doing as well. Is I've been going in and using all of my Mithril, I think it is. Something like that, yeah. I've been using all of that currency anyways to unlock things for my siege. But overall, I'm still really enjoying it. Like I said, I was surprised that Shadows of War took me away from South Park as much as it did. And granted, I did have those controller issues with South Park, so it wasn't like I just jumped in and started having fun. So I don't know. Overall, like Shadows of War, I think is probably like my winner of the fall so far. Although I haven't gotten hands on, obviously, Mario Odyssey and Assassin's Creed, which are kind of like the next big ones to come out. Mm-hmm. But Shadow of War was just such a surprise for me, I think. So I would highly recommend this game if you guys haven't picked it up yet. We're a couple weeks into it now. Both Ryan and I have put, you know, between 15 and 20 hours into it. And I guess we're not even a couple of weeks into it yet. We're only a week into it.
Week
it came out last week, yeah, so considering all of the other stuff that I play, I've still made that much time for Shadows of War. It's a compelling game, so if you guys are thinking of picking it up, definitely go and check it out, because I really can't recommend it enough. It's super, super fun.
Yeah, it's awesome. And a correction from last week, a couple people that chimed in and reminded me that the gold, I had said you can't earn it, you have to buy it. You can earn it. They give you like a 500, you know, coin hit for completing one of the community quests, and then after that it's 50 coins for every fourth community quest.
It drops off really quickly then.
It's a big hit. It's not
enough. From getting like 500 to getting like 12 per community quest.
So you get 500. That's a good point. And 500 of that initial hit isn't enough to buy the top tier gold chest. So I haven't.
It's enough to get you close enough that then you think that you have to go and buy the currency, and then of course you can't buy just the amount of currency that you need to get the top tier quest. You're gonna have to buy like 1,000 when you need like 200, and then it's gonna be like, oh wow, my wallet never quite lines up, so then I have to keep, you know, filling it up again.
It is that system, but I do want to reassure folks that are interested in picking this game up that in the 20 hours that I've played, good majority into Act 2, there's been no need to dip into the market. I have placed the characters that I earned through the pre-order. You do get a couple of different chests for pre-ordering depending on the edition. And I pre-ordered, might as well open those boxes, see what they are used for. And you kind of just place your characters willy-nilly into open slots within the army. And it is as unsatisfying as you would think. Pretty boring stuff. So I do not recommend buying those boxes. Just go out and have fun and let the nemesis.
At least they didn't lock something super fun behind a microtransaction. That would be crappy.
No, it's literally, from what I've heard, the marketplace comes in handy in the end game, which happens literally after the end of the game, in which you are trying to unlock a bonus cutscene, similar to you would get the end of a game. That's the conclusion, but that if you get 100%, you get that little extra scene that really doesn't mean much, and you could go to YouTube and watch it. So
it's not really required.
It's not required. But if you're enjoying the game, you might as well keep playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
For those folks who have the time.
But if you keep playing, eventually you'll just naturally unlock everything, so.
Exactly. Yeah, therein lies the... And there are folks out there that are refusing to play this game because of loot boxes. I mean, I think both of us have said that just ignore that. You don't have to buy them. You don't.
Well, need
them.
I mean, you buying Shadow of War is not an endorsement for loot boxes in games. You buying in-game currency with your real money is the part of that is like reinforcing the bad behavior of loot boxes and microtransactions in game. You can still buy the game and play the game and have fun in the game and not support the loot boxes. Just don't buy the in-game currency with your real money. You're done. I think from the sounds of it, you don't have to, again, I'm not at end game yet, but from the sounds of it, you don't have to, you don't have to buy loot boxes. So just don't.
Yeah.
The game is still awesome. And I haven't felt at all like I even had to open my loot boxes yet. So
Yeah, you really don't.
I did. Well, I opened my loot boxes, and then it was like, you can't use this shit yet. So, what are you even doing? And I was like, oh, sorry, Shadows of War.
The game is at least telling you, like,
yeah,
this is not for you yet. Come back in Act 2. And even when in Act 2 you unlock that capability, it doesn't really scream, you need to do these. You need to mm-hmm. open these things. And you do earn a lot of those loot boxes by doing the weekly and weekend challenges, by upping your rank in online conquest, which is basically just, sieging other players.
I still haven't been able to do one of those avenge missions.
Oh,
I
really?
Die every time. Yeah.
They are tougher. You know, I will give you that.
I feel they are. Tougher. Like, yeah. they're much tougher for some reason. It's like you enter, it says enter another player's world and mm-hmm. avenge them. And I feel like whenever I go into the other player's world, it's super freaking hard.
Yeah, you get swarmed. And honestly, yeah. the biggest problem I've had with those Vendetta missions is that, man, whoever's world I'm entering, they just need to clean it up a little bit. Because yes. I go in there, yes. and what happens? I get betrayed, I get ambushed, and I'm like, wow, get your orcs in line. Come on. In my world, you come to my world to vendate, do those avenge. Missions in my world. Avenge, thank you. You're not going to have any of that willy-nilly ambushing betrayal stuff. You're just going to have that one dude that accidentally killed me. I don't know how he did it. But, anyways, I just feel like the game offers a lot of these opportunities to just have fun, and I did one online conquest, which is the forts, and I did a friendly one, so I loaded up James's fortress, because he was the only one that had progressed far enough. So I was like, oh, let's see how this goes. And in typical matchmaking fashion, when you play against a friend, it doesn't impact your rank at all. You have to play against randos, but I did it anyways, and I killed all those dudes, and I don't know what that does besides give him a notification that I killed all those dudes, but it was still a lot of fun.
It's probably just enough to piss him off.
He needs to work on his fortress.
Why'd you kill all my dudes?
he just needs to kind of level his dudes up. I mean, they weren't like pushovers per se, but I did kill them all pretty quickly.
Yeah, so get on Ryan's level, James.
Jeez. It was the initial level, so I'll give him that. It's like the first region. So I mean, I haven't touched the first region in a long time, so I can kind of see why it's probably got level 20 dudes hanging about. So. Watching the door.
So we wanted to remind everyone that we have our game night this week. So tomorrow night we'll be playing over on twitch.tv/JossPlays. Make sure you join into the Discord, bit.ly/TGI Discord. If you guys want to join in on our game night, there is going to be a post on patreon.com/thegamersin that's going to be available to all our patrons, so you guys can help us decide what exactly it is that we're going to play. I don't know what new multiplayer stuff is out right now. Not to mention, we can do some old stuff like Depth. I've been getting updates for that game crazy, and I don't think I've been in it for a year. So there could be some old favorites that we can go back to as well.
Yeah, I saw there was a Halloween update for Killing Floor 2. I don't know how much we.
There's also been a lot of Dead by Daylight updates. There's a lot of new killers and stuff in that game, and that's a very Halloween-y game to play. So
I think a Halloween game would be nice. I saw a mention for Splatoon 2, but I know the console streaming is not nearly as fun or efficient. But I think Dead by Daylight would be a fun one. I haven't played it in a long time. I think they're getting Freddy Krueger at some point before Halloween as well, which.
Oh, cool.
Is interesting.
So. I just watched that movie for Embrace the Spoilers.
Oh.
I had never seen it before, so now I have, and it was actually awesome. Yeah, the 1984 version. Yeah.
They get progressively worse, so stop while you're ahead. Trust me. It's like Friday the 13th. The first one's great. The second one's... Actually, I think Friday the 13th, the second one's also great.
That was the other movie. So we did Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th. We haven't actually done the spoiler show for it yet, but I did a double header Friday the 13th into Nightmare on Elm Street, and both of them were new to me. So and the first Friday the 13th I thought was kind of meh, but don't want to spoil Embrace the Spoilers, so I won't say anything else. But
so you're gonna watch Friday or Freddy versus Jason.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly, eventually. Right. We also have a patron ad this week from Simon, who says, Geekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. You can join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. You can find them on iTunes or at geeklynews.com. That brings us to our topic of the week this week. And Ryan, you wanted to talk all about Visceral Studios gets shut down. They were working on the next Star Wars game from EA. And so, yeah, I'm going to let you take it away because I care about Star Wars games about as much as I care about Star Wars. So,
yeah, so
it's all you, man.
I wanted to first start this off in that I think both of us share a similar... I think you care... I don't want to make this sound super negative, but you care a little bit less than I do about Star Wars. Like, I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. I appreciate the video games. I like the movies. I'll go see them. Yep. But I'm not like...
I'm not a crazy rabid Garrett fan
who
just eats up every little bit of Star Wars news, can't wait for any of the rest of it, tries to figure out where the story's going. I don't care. I just go and sit in the movie theater, have fun, and then forget I ever saw it.
Well, except that last part, pretty much the same.
Yeah, but like...
depending on which one, like episode 1 through 3, I'd probably recommend forgetting you saw it.
Some people are just ridiculously huge Star Wars fans. So, yeah. I mean, like, I know, but that's... I think you're right there. It's not either one of us.
Okay. But I will say, though, Visceral Games is a studio that was behind some of my favorite games on the 360, which were Dead Space. That franchise, loved it. Loved it to death. So great. So then when I heard that they were making a Star Wars game, I was like, awesome. They're getting back to their action-adventure roots and not doing the typical, like, you know, EA parent or EA... child studio where they're like, oh, you get to work on Battlefield and you get to work on this, and no, you're not going to do Dead Space, that wasn't profitable. So they give them Star Wars, and I thought that was awesome. Amy Hennig behind the Naughty Dog Uncharted franchise, when she left Naughty Dog, she went over to Visceral and she was working on the title, and they've been working on it since 2013. And then I see this news that EA, second studio this year, is shutting down Visceral Games. Therefore, you know, pretty much taking this game, at least the vision of it, and completely, you know, scattering it. It's not happening. The game that Visceral Games was working on is still happening, and they've moved it to a Vancouver studio. So they're still making that action-adventure Star Wars game, but they are changing. They're changing it. Like, that was their reasoning for basically shutting down an entire studio, is that this story-based linear adventure is not up to snuff, and we don't think Visceral is worth keeping around anymore, so it's gone. And we're going to move the project over to Vancouver, which was already helping with the project. And there's an interesting, you know, story here that when you have these large publishers with, you know, many satellite studios that are all contributing to a game, you can clearly see here that the flagship studio that's working on the game is not safe. Like, you can kill that studio and then just move it to another one. And it's kind of weird, because that was the whole sort of heart behind this game, is that it was Visceral's making a Star Wars adventure game. And now Visceral's no more. So to me...
So I'm now not... EA is going to totally screw it over, just like they did when they shut down Maxis and tried to keep making Sims titles and totally screwed those up too.
Yeah. Or, you know, when they not too long ago released Andromeda in a very unstable state, and then basically blame the game and shut down the studio. The headlines, you know, which are probably accurate, being a huge publisher, they're able to offer packages to their employees to be like, hey, we're shutting down your studio, but if you want to move to X, Y, or Z, which isn't the best option for everybody, but it's still like, it's a job. And a lot of folks do take that because it's the video games industry. You have to be flexible. There is that opportunity to go work on other projects, maybe even the same project. It sounds like they were moving people around and actually, you know, having positions available at this Vancouver studio. But that brings us to the next point of like, okay, Visceral's not working on this anymore. What Star Wars games? Because EA has the entire portfolio of Star Wars available to them. Just EA is making Star Wars games. So if you look at what the future looks like, if they've moved and canceled the Visceral game, it's not going to be coming out anytime soon. You really only have Battlefront available to you in the near future. And you know, that's not much of a, it's not much of a catalog when you look at it. Like a multiplayer only or multiplayer focused first person shooter isn't for everybody. And Star Wars is kind of, you know, built for everybody in a way. So it's kind of weird to see that they're like sort of pigeonholing for the immediate future this huge franchise that kind of belongs to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But you look at what's coming next, and you know, BioWare is supposedly working on something, but that could just be attributed to the Knights of the Old Republic MMO that they have, which is still running. Battlefront obviously is a thing. Respawn's working on something. Criterion, which was a racing, it's a racing studio. They did the Burnout games. You ever play the Burnout games?
Nope. Okay. I don't do racing games.
You don't do racing games?
No. Except Mario Kart, but
yeah,
really think that counts.
hey, it counts. But you know, it's not
quite the same.
It's not quite. It's a kart. I guess it's a different genre. But anyways, you kind of look at these, you know, these projects that keep happening, and I guess if we want to talk less about the Star Wars aspect of it, because I think we've captured it, and look more at what EA is doing to these studios as they snap them up, put them on a project of their doing, and then close them down when things aren't going their way. Like, I know people are already at this point, but I kind of look at this and be like, I don't know if I can like buy into any EA games anymore. Like, it just feels like it's like subscribing to a new television show. Like, is this thing going to be around long enough, or am I going to like watch this and be like, oh, I can't wait for season two to see what happens next? And it's like, no, they canceled it, so you're never going to get answers, and you have to live your life wondering why so-and-so did such and such. I don't know. Like,
yep.
Does that make you kind of hesitate?
I hesitate on anything involved with EA. Like, I just, oh man, they do this all the time. They're so awful. They cut corners. They rush things out. I've been burned so many times by EA. Like, yeah, I'm very, very, very cautious with a lot of their stuff. As I think anyone should be. They're not the greatest.
Yeah, and the thing is, you look at what they did with Andromeda, and they completely like said, no, we're not doing any more Mass Effect for a while. It's being shelved. And then you look at what they did with Battlefront 1. The only reason we're getting a sequel is because the first one sold well, but that one had a lot of issues, which were pointed out by countless reviews. You know, lack of content, expensive DLC, you know,
which I feel like is just like the flagship of what EA is as a company. Mm-hmm. Like, not a lot of content, expensive DLC, like all the problems with things like Battlefront are just problems with EA as a whole.
Yeah. But then you look at what they're doing with the sequel, and you have a full-scale campaign, you have, you know, free DLC supported by loot boxes, expanded multiplayer and progression, a bunch of characters, a bunch of maps across all three eras of Star Wars. It's kind of like they take one step to build the engine and the fan base, and then they take a second step to basically give us everything we wanted. So I wonder, like...
We haven't actually seen it yet, so no. I'm still reserving judgment, because I'm pretty sure they made big promises with a lot of their stuff lately, and they haven't been delivering, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to reserve my judgment on Battlefront for sure. Like, mm-hmm. Holy crap, well,
it's not out yet. No, it's true. It's not out yet, but having played the beta, it felt like there was, you know, a good chunk there, and the promise, I guess really the biggest chunk of it is a promise of free content. So it'll be interesting to see whether that free content lines up with what would have been a paid mm-hmm. season pass. But it's kind of weird and sad to see one of the biggest franchises mismanaged like this. And usually when a studio gets shut down, it's because the game was not so hot. So you kind of wonder, like, what the hell is going on at these studios? And whether or not, like, obviously they're not going to say, like, the game was bad, so we, you know, we closed the studio. That's not good for, you know, your stakeholders or publicity for that matter. But I think EA was kind of like stuck between a rock and a hard place when they made this announcement, because either way it's going to look bad. Cause you just have Battlefront and mobile games to go on. So, and even with BioWare, like, I'm not necessarily I'm hesitant on them now too after Andromeda. It's just like, probably going to have to wait.
Which is unfortunate because BioWare, like, was industry leading kind of thing. Like, they were, their games they made were phenomenal. And then, yeah, now not so much.
No, I'm not sure what it is. And again, I think I have to, you know, play the same card that you have, is that anything that BioWare puts out, I have to reserve judgment until it comes out, see how it's received, and then, like,
not get excited anymore, which is kind of crappy too. Like,
yeah, which is kind of like, I don't know,
the main point, like, of the show. There's a new BioWare game coming out, awesome, yeah, I can't wait. And now it's like, really?
Yeah.
Andromeda, though.
Well, like, franchise, even like BioWare as a studio aside, like, franchises that they put out, like Mass Effect, there's a new Mass Effect coming and it's going to be huge, I can't wait. There's a new Dragon Age coming and it's going to be huge, I can't wait. And now it's going to be like, well, do I really want to get invested in this new story they're trying to tell if, by typical fashion, they're sprinkling the seeds of sequel and prequel and DLC? Like, I don't want to get too invested even in playing this 80-hour adventure that's available to me. And I don't know, I'm kind of on one side, like, if the game was bad, I'm glad they've decided to kind of cut their ties and move it. But if it was, a lot of people are like, oh, it's probably because they couldn't get microtransactions into it. I mean, we don't know, but it is sad when a studio gets shut down by a publisher that's already shut down a major studio that's been working on a game. Like Andromeda, they were working on it for 5 years. Visceral Games has been working on this title for 4 years. It's kind of crazy. That's 9 years across two studios that they've just basically washed away. It's weird.
Yeah.
At least one of the games came out, I suppose. But
yeah.
I don't know where EA's getting
maybe
all this
it
money.
Shouldn't have.
No, maybe it shouldn't have, or maybe it should have came out in the holiday season. But I think it would have been just trounced by everything that's also coming out this holiday season, because it wasn't that strong. Polish wasn't going to fix a lot of its issues, but. Yeah, I don't know. I just read this news and it was kind of a bummer, and I imagine people who are super fans of Star Wars look at this as like, man, can we get someone on board who knows what they're doing?
Yeah. So. Well, speaking of the holiday season, wanted to remind everybody that we are in our Extra Life campaign right now. We are going to be playing on November 11th, but the official Extra Life day is actually November 4th. Unfortunately, I will be away at BlizzCon, so we are going to play on November 11th. Our team is doing awesome. We're already 20% of our goal, so thank you guys so much for signing up and being amazing and being really on point with getting the word out there. So if you want to go to bit.ly/TGI Extra Life 2017, you guys can donate to our campaign. And yeah, we will be streaming on the day and night of November 11th on twitch.tv/amovetv. So please do join us and help us spread the word. Even if you can't actually donate to the campaign, just telling people about it does a whole lot to help us just spread the word and get eyeballs on our content and, you know, kind of get to the people who can potentially make donations. So, there's lots of different ways you can contribute to the campaign. It doesn't have to be monetarily, and we appreciate each and every one of you who have been supporting us for Extra Life. This is our sixth year now that we have been taking part in Extra Life. So it's super fun. Again, that is November 11th, not November 4th. Although, Ryan, I think you're planning on doing something on November 4th, right?
Yep. I will not be at BlizzCon, and I will be streaming Blizzard games starting at 8 p.m. on the 4th. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. And since everybody under the Amove banner will be either away or at BlizzCon, I'll probably be on twitch.tv/AmoveTV. I'll be bringing people in and, you know, touching base with the rest of our team members to see if they're actually playing on the proper day and maybe seeing if we want to do something with them. But it'll basically be an opportunity to focus on BlizzCon, talk about the news, but also just kind of hang out.
And do some pre-hype.
Exactly. Pre-hype with some Extra Life gamers. It'll be a lot of fun.
So that's going to do it for us tonight. Ryan, did you want to read the last patron ad that we have for this evening before I do the outro?
Yes. So The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything for an honest consumer review. The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. And I know I've seen a couple of The Geek Review's work in our Discord, so if you're in our Discord, be sure to check it out.
You can visit us on the web by going to gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth, Embrace the Spoilers, and Heroes Forge. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/amovetv. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you think about the games of October or possibly the shuttering of Visceral Games, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.